Well, good evening and welcome to Onward to Where, Your Votes Will Tell. This is the second in a series of conversations about the future of San Diego. It is sponsored by the Helen Edison Lecture Series. I'm Shannon Bradley with UCSD TV, and I have the wonderful pleasure of filling in for Mary Walshock tonight, who is in Europe. Our featured speaker is the legendary Neil Morgan. He has written about San Diego for 56 years, first for the San Diego Tribune, and then the Union Tribune, and now for voiceofsandiego.org. Neil has also written several books, among them the biography Dr. Seuss and Mr. Geisel, which he co-authored with his wife and fellow journalist Judith Morgan. And in that book, they describe Ted Geisel's famous cartoon about our hometown, in which the character asks of San Diego, "Onward to where?" Well, that's the question we will continue to explore tonight. After Neil's remark, he will join Scott Lewis, the co-executive editor of Voice of San Diego, and me for a short visit, and then we'll turn to you, the audience, for questions. Now, as many of you know, Neil loves a challenge, so please speak your mind. But first, let's hear from Neil Morgan.
You are a doughty band. Welcome. Let's just have a sort of prayer meeting together for San Diego. I think that's what it needs. We might just sort of... My father did a lot of prayer meetings. They were usually on Wednesday nights, as I remember, but we could make an exception. It was about 100 years ago when tonight's inquiry into Onward to Where would have been billed as geraniums versus smokestacks. That was the only issue in the 80s and 90s of that century. It was used to describe the startling contrasts in goals that the very early pioneering leaders sought for this region. In part, as you can tell simply through driving around the city, geraniums won. Nobody then seemed to consider scientific research or high tech or higher education as part of the San Diego future. And that is where, of course, as all of us here know, the greatest progress has been made and the greatest distinction has been brought to the community. And oddly tonight, when we ask, onward to where, we are still quite uncertain of who we are in San Diego or what we may become. And yet the stakes grow desperately higher year by year. Is San Diego a place or a city? Or a county, or a dream? I don't know the answer. It may be some of all of those things, but we need to know a little more about ourselves, I think, before we can decide who we're going to be when we grow up. And however you view it, how do we correct and survive the insidious financial scandal at City Hall, which can cripple this city for years and years to come? Our answers may be more important to this city than all our discussions of lifestyle or goals or reputation or even of the economy of the region. San Diego is our very own city, our own baby, to help guide and to bring up and to run, whether it goes into showplace or slum. What we do or fail to do can determine whether San Diego grows up as an intellectual oasis, which is the dream on this campus and others, or as a border sprawl, almost indistinguishable from the sprawl to our south across the border. It can be either of those. It can be a great place to live, and we can just say, fine, to hell with everybody else. We're having a good time. It's too bad about downtown. It's too bad about the waterfront. It's too bad about the border. We'll just go on. Things are going pretty well. And for most of us, things are going pretty well. Most of us are not, I'm afraid, paying attention to our civic responsibilities, because we are a blessed, fortunate, presumably more informed and perhaps wealthier segment of the city of San Diego. Judith and I recently returned from a gorgeous visit with some friends to the regal Russian city of St. Petersburg. It looked as crisp and tidy as if it were dressed for a party. And we learned it had been, actually. We arrived just after George Bush and Tony Blair and the Group of Eight. And with all of its accompanying army of media, they were planning to give the city great worldwide exposure. Streets were washed nightly for the occasion, and church icons were shined and polished every day. Borders had been closed, and traffic had been kept out of the heart of the city. We learned that city officials had gathered up a few thousand homeless residents from St. Petersburg and bused them to the countryside, providing them food and shelter until we VIPs departed. Well, that's one way to handle a city's problems. President Putin, who was a native, proud native of St. Petersburg, was right there and making sure that it made the best showing possible. But one of our companions in our bright little group, which included four faculty members from UCSD, one of our companions let loose a cry, "It's a Potemkin village. The Russians are still doing it." Well, during the long reign of Catherine the Great, I like to remind myself, one of her unctuous lackeys, Grigory Potemkin, was so eager to please his boss that he built elaborate fake villages along the routes that the Empress would be traveling throughout the Ukraine and Crimea. This was one of history's more massive con jobs. A Potemkin village went into the worldwide vocabulary. A Potemkin village appears impressive, but in fact lacks substance. It's an empty stage set. Nobody there is doing anything. Here in San Diego, we watch our own versions of Potemkin villages rise without noticing them. Such casual misuse now threatens that glorious 15 acres of harborfront at the foot of Broadway. It's in the news every day now. It is a site that we should insist on making this city's landmark for the world, as Sydney did its opera house. It should be the site of something that has always eluded this city, an identifying icon that helps us remind ourselves and the world who we are. Timing is critical. The fate of these 15 acres is being decided right now by Center City Development Corporation. I urge you all to read and learn and act. Because along our bayfront, mediocre taste and greed threaten to fill any empty space. Just look at the foot of Broadway proposal that has the upper hand. Standing by, wrapping himself in the flag, is the hyperactive Doug Manchester, a developer who is always ready to step forward and help out on civic issues if the money is right. Manchester says his plan for the foot of Broadway would return more income to the city than others, and certainly to him. But other, better, saner plans are on the boards, widely favored by architects and environmentalists, and I suspect by most of us here. These plans do not reek of greed, or they seek a people's plaza that could help us to define San Diego. Think of San Francisco's Embarcadero or Seattle's harborfront. This is San Diego's signature property, as precious in the psyche of this big city as the La Jolla Cove is to those of us in La Jolla. Too often we have awakened too late to win land use battles that shape our city forever. The most recent and tragic instance, and the one that makes me angrier still to think of, was the debacle created by the developer Corky McMillan at the Naval Training Center. We lost the chance to create a beautiful second Balboa Park beside the bay on that old base. Mayor Susan Golding had appointed a committee of citizens to make the choice of a developer. I replay this to us so that we can figure out how it's going to happen next time unless we intercede. Susan appointed a committee of citizens to make the choice of a developer. The committee unanimously chose Lennar, a national company with long experience in military base conversion. But politics intervened. I grew angry enough that I spent a long afternoon in the corridors of City Hall outside City Council watching the perversion of government on that issue. As the council met, the contractor McMillan and his staff summoned each council member into the hallway, one by one, to do and say whatever they needed to do and say to get and to hold their votes. It was ugly. Such scenes destroy faith in government, but they can serve as lessons. With a chance to have created another great city park, this time beside the bay, we turned the job over to a housing developer. It happened just as it does in the movies, in those secret huddles outside city council chambers. Have we learned anything from such debacles, or will we, laid-back San Diegans, still stand aloof, comfortable as we so often do, and allow another Potemkin village to define this city's image? While we're looking around for leadership, let me suggest a second-generation Tijuanan named Askan Lutaroth, who is as courageous as they come, a businessman, a third-generation Tijuanan, a family man, who is fighting the system at City Hall even while his colleagues are being extorted and kidnapped. Askan founded a citizens group called Transparencia. It continues to monitor city government and undertakes to hold Tijuana City Hall to account. Even the Tijuana media now report on the findings of Transparencia. They are way ahead of us on that matter in Tijuana. It's hard to find any stronger efforts than this in San Diego. Our own Mayor Jerry Sanders is a decent, honest, likable man. That's great, but it's not enough for these times. He needs to be out front, leading, talking directly to us. I'd like to hear more from Jerry and less from City Attorney Mike Aguirre. Why isn't the mayor making this talk here tonight, for instance? Why isn't he confiding in us in the same way that dear old Franklin D. Roosevelt talked this nation through the Depression with his fireside chats on radio? Jerry doesn't need to sound like an orator. He needs only to sound like someone who is wise and concerned and can lead us toward the next step. I say to him, Your Honor, that is absolutely vital. Tell us precisely how bad the mess is and how you propose that we cure it. We don't know half the story yet. Our city's reputation and our credit rating remain in a dark shadow. We need a detailed program of remedy and reform in city government, and now in the county as well, probably in all of our suburban city halls and everywhere else that the faith of voters has been put at risk. You'll find that the matter of the Miramar Air Station will be on your ballot in the latest chapter of our Fables of a San Diego Airport. It's been on the ballot more times than I can remember. I watched it very closely because I was stationed there for the last 2 years of my service in the Navy during World War II. It's become a wonderful joke because nobody is living up to what they're saying about Miramar. Back in the 1950s, the Navy was ready to sell Miramar back to the city for almost nothing, something like $200,000. And then city council voters voted that Miramar was, do you believe it, too far out of town. That's how that vote came down in 1954. Maybe we don't need a new airport. I don't hear the airlines asking for one. One of Mayor Murphy's gravest blunders, however, was to reject the use of the city's Brown Field as an air freight terminal. It's huge, and it's sitting down there this side of the border, and it had all the important federal zoning for airport use. It could have absorbed enough of Lindbergh's traffic to give us another easy decade or two of use at Lindbergh for passenger traffic. Instead, for God's sake, Murphy and City Council, despite what some of us wrote and pleaded, Murphy and City Council sold it to a subdivider for tract homes. We need to prove something big to the agencies that have dumped on our city's credit rating. We must prove that we are busy making San Diego an honest city that is run like a business, not a laid-back haven of sunshine and surf. Most of the people we've recently elected to City Hall are trying hard to deal with the inevitably casualties of years of misgovernance. I trust Jerry Sanders, and I absolutely revere Ronnie Froman, the Lady Admiral who serves as his chief of staff. But as Ronnie said after she'd been at City Hall in her job for just 1 week, the mess was even worse than she had expected. There has been huge financial damage to this city that is still unreported, despite our great work at voiceofsandiego.org, please. But it is still a great deal to be said. There's human damage, and there's physical damage. There's financial loss. And there is also, as we all know, a man who was highly respected as a Superior Court judge, who then became a mayor of San Diego and now has become invisible. Yet Dick Murphy's fate is better than that of some of his colleagues. Congressman Cunningham is locked up. We need to put this in perspective when we get up and look out at the sunshine in the morning. Old habits of local government are in disgrace, but they remain entrenched and on the books. We look back more than 20 years to the last strong and successful mayor, Pete Wilson. This city desperately needs a reformation of some kind. We need continuing hard-nosed analysis of city management and reassurance that the people at City Hall understand they are working for voters who are watching them. There's one last big problem that overrides many others. It's the media. I served many good years reporting for a succession of 3 San Diego daily newspapers. We won our Pulitzer Prizes, But most San Diego media have most often tiptoed with too shallow coverage of city affairs. A small town buddy system still poisons the air, and it stunts our efforts to become a functionally successful city. We have high hopes at Voice of San Diego of spurring the print media to get with it. Incidentally, I'd like to mention that Buzz Woolley, the patron saint of Voice of San Diego, is here. Where are you, Buzz? There, that quiet gentleman back there is the man who called me and said, why don't we have lunch and talk about an idea? And that became Voice of San Diego, and Scott Lewis became its great editor. Well, the loaded question at City Hall remains blunt. Who are we trying to protect? If anyone. If the answer is no one, let's get on with reform. If we are still protecting somebody, and that's the reason for us holding in place, I think it's all of our job, all of our goal to find out who it is and why. The courts are certainly concerned with this and are certain to answer some of these questions for us. We should all be seeking answers. We would be farther along had we heeded Pete Wilson's advice a year ago that the city declare bankruptcy. That word carries the stigma, however, of misdeeds, and it seemed too ugly a word for city council and mayor to accept. Yet the proposed reform process, which will be imposed on us, will seem quite a lot like bankruptcy. It creates Auditor General, Audit Committee, and a Monitor of City Finances. That is the structure that will be imposed on San Diego. Good, it should have been done 5 years ago. An outsider may serve as the ultimate controller for debt repayment and budget reform. One more thing we need urgently is an experienced tutor in re-energizing City Hall. The milquetoast council of the Kroll Company has been nothing more than a bandage, and it has cost millions. A citizens' committee could have done as well. Within this city of famously successful corporate chieftains, and throughout the private sector, great CEOs, why in the world aren't we calling on them to help manage city reform? I challenge the mayor and council to set up a civic consulting group. Maybe Qualcomm's Irwin Jacobs could be persuaded to help put some people together to get our bearings and plot our future. I'd like to see Pat Shea or Diane Scipione on that panel. Diane especially proves to us that one person can make a difference. Years ago, she had to fight for months to get anybody to listen to her report on the disorderly business conduct of the city pension board, of which she was a member. Then she had to scrap for months to get anything about it into the newspaper beyond the Neil Morgan column. I ate it up from the start, but my newspaper wouldn't. I'd like to see an economist on that panel and a sociologist and representatives of every major group in San Diego. The years are past when such a committee could be conducted by the towering and fearless Roger Revelle, who many of you here knew and love, the father of UCSD. Since his death, no one has been able to fill those size 15 shoes. But we seek to get there. Let's teach ourselves that City Hall politics is not a spectator sport. This is our city and this is our money. What's even more important, it's our future, our children's future. Let's get involved and watch more closely. Thank you.
Thank you. That was a wonderful talk. We asked you to throw some bombs, and you delivered, so I appreciate you doing that. I want to start first with the Navy Broadway complex. The Navy owns that land, so how can the citizens solve this problem?
We deeded that land to the Navy years ago, but the Center City Development Corporation is pivotal in deciding what they do there. And if they have the courage that we should inject in them, they can make sure it happens well.
Well, Scott, you write a lot about politics for the Voice of San Diego. What do you think? Does the CCDC have the spine that Neil is talking about here?
I think the whole city is trying to decide if it has the spine that's necessary to stand up to this. There's a lot of talk about how people don't like it and how people are having trouble with the idea of what's going to be built, but there's nobody that's thrown the wrench into the wheel yet, so we'll see if that happens. But there's a January 1st deadline. If the city hasn't given its blessing to the proposed Manchester plan, then from what I understand, the property will fall into the hands of the base realignment and closure process and courts as well. That the Manchester's not going to give up without fighting on that sort of thing, and so it's going to be a mess. And who knows what'll happen? Even if it does fall into the BRAC, the realignment process, then you know there's a chance that the city might end up with another owner of that property that would be even more difficult to work with. So it's a tough problem. And
is that the fear then, if it goes to BRAC, that it's the devil you don't know as opposed to the devil you do know? Is that what the concern is?
I guess in many circles, there's others that say that we don't need to be as worried about that possibility as others. So, it's one of the toughest problems I think the city and the leaders are facing right now. But status quo and this thing that's going forward is not one in many supporters. So we'll see how they try.
But there has been a large citizen outcry over the Navy complex plans, from what I understand, and that's good, isn't it? I mean, you want an engaged citizenry.
However we can measure a citizen outcry in San Diego, I'm never quite sure.
Well, there's plenty of outcry among the leaders as well, but nobody has really stepped up to say, well, okay, we don't like it, so let's try to do something about it, or let's try to really hamper what's going forward. There's a lot of talk around here, that they don't like things or that they want things differently, but there's something missing. There's always that one last step that never quite gets flipped, so we'll see what happens.
Balls is the word. Can we use that?
Can we say that on UCSD TV? I don't know. Yeah. All right, what about the airport? Neil, you've been writing about the airport issue for half a century. And Scott,
I would miss it. I would miss it if it were built.
Well, what, Scott, it's on the ballot now. What happens if the voters don't approve this and don't, I mean, it's just an advisory vote as it is, but what are the stakes here with this?
That's the thing. Who knows what happens if they even approve it? There's a lot of confusion about what it actually means or what it actually says.
As I understand it, Scott, is an advisory ballot, isn't it?
Well, it tells people to do something to try to get something else done. And so it's a very confusing, very toothless proposition. But what's very strange about it is the amount of support or non-support that it's gotten. Just this last week, the Convention and Visitors Bureau, the most logical organization you'd think to support it among the business groups, said they are going to remain neutral on the ballot proposition. And this is interesting because they say, well, they want to be neutral on the ballot proposition, but they're for a new airport. And so they want to support a new airport. So I said, well, does this mean that this is an indictment of the airport authority and this ballot proposition? They said, no, we love the airport authority. So there's, again, all this happy talk, all these, we're saying the right things, but then the question comes down to make a decision and, you know, be for or against it, and nobody wants to do that. The mayor had trouble with that same sort of problem.
Why is that? Why has this airport been such a difficult issue for San Diego? You've been looking at this for a long time.
All I can tell you is that this is the 42nd revival of can we have an airport? And I looked back in my first scrapbooks in 1956. I covered a great convincing surge in the city for a new airport. Nothing happened then or since. Ask me why. Maybe we don't need an airport. Maybe we really don't need an airport.
Well, can the city grow in the way that the boosters want it to grow without a major international airport with more than one runway?
Maybe that's what we want.
What do you think, Scott?
I think you've had a professor up at UCSD that's done a lot of work that says that the trend line doesn't show that there is a capacity problem coming up at Lindbergh. So there's questions that arise after that, and they've personally attacked him, but as far as the actual concerns about his logic haven't really, you know, killed him. They call him the rock star economist
yes.
He's come out with.
You're talking to Richard Carson.
Richard Carson, yeah. I think this debate, unfortunately for the boosters who would want an airport, was cast as a airport versus versus Marines and the military versus the civic sort of boosters, and nobody wanted to be against the Marines, and I think that unfortunately for the people that wanted this to go forward, that's how it got cast, and fortunately for the people that didn't want it to go forward, that's how it got cast. So
what's next then? Just more impasse? Just another study? Another few years?
I think there'll be an effort to dissolve the airport authority. I think there are people who are very upset that they didn't come out with very strong leadership and be able to unite the opinion leaders in town. And I think that they'll react and they'll take revenge and they'll kill the airport authority.
Lack of leadership.
Nobody else has been able to do it either, but why not get rid of them? My perspective on this, I had a visit 3 days ago with Bill Gibbs, who built the first airport down at Chula Vista, National City, actually, in the 1920s. Gibbs Field became the one, I don't know whether it's still called Gibbs Field, but it's the one across from Miramar, the private airport field. Bill's absolutely right on top of the whole situation at the age of 98, and he says, what do we need an airport for? And so I started telling him, and he just laughed. And actually, we went to St. Petersburg. It was no big problem getting to L.A. Do we really want all of the business that commercial aircraft may bring us? We want the tourism, we know, but we don't want to be a big city. Some of those things, I think, are acting on the civic psyche when they talk airport.
One thing that we talked about last year when you were here, Neil, was the betrayal of the public trust, and that was running through a lot of the political issues at the time. In the year that Sanders has been there, has he or the city council done anything to begin to restore that trust? I know you want him to be a stronger leader, but what about the basic issue of trust?
You want to start that?
Sure. I think when Sanders took over, there was a lot of talk about him producing some more transparent budget documents, things like that, that would really restore that confidence. And he didn't. And when the budget issue came up, there were a lot of the remnants of what we remembered from the past about, there were even talk about how, well, this isn't really a problem. This is the media storm or something like that. And there wasn't a down-to-earth sort of discussion about what kinds of situations we were dealing with. And that was kind of a shock because for the first few months we thought that would be different. And we're still waiting for the beef, I guess. Where's the beef? There is a big problem. And these little peripheral reforms that we're talking about are well and good, but where does the substantial change come from? I think is when we see something that addresses that, I think we'll be able to make a judgment as to whether things have changed or not. So he's still riding a honeymoon time until that happens. We'll see what happens.
Well, what about the ballot propositions that are his reforms or that he's advocating? Can you tell us a little bit about that, starting with Prop B, what it is and what the deal is with that?
Prop B, I believe, is the one where it would force any benefits that would be given to city employees as far as pension benefits in the future, that they would force the citizens to vote on them. And so the idea being that citizens, it would be hard to get pension benefits through the way that they've gotten through in the past, and so maybe fewer of them would go through without, promising and finding funding for them. And so that seems like a pretty clear one that probably won't face too much opposition.
But is that practical to turn to the voters to vote on pension plans?
Well, they do it in San Francisco, and San Francisco won't allow a pension boost to occur, an enhancement to employees' pensions, without a vote of the people, and voila, they don't have a pension problem up there. And so they have a fully funded system. And so it's interesting to see a conservative, fiscally conservative San Diego have such a massive pension problem, and yet, you know, the crazy liberals in San Francisco don't. And then Prop C is the discussion that would, this would be the privatization, they call it managed competition, where they would allow people to bid for certain services that the city provides right now. They need to, that's illegal under city law right now, and so they need a law to change that.
So what do you think, Neil? Is that leadership, asking the voters to make these decisions?
No, I don't think... I don't think that's leadership. I am disturbed by the thought that we really don't know what we want. We really don't know who we want to be. There is absolutely nobody leading us to tell us the answers to those questions. We're a swarm. We're not a city. We're a swarm.
A swarm. Well, if you go forward with this idea of a citizens advisory group, isn't that abdicating the leadership? I mean, we elect these people to represent us and take care of government and do what we want them to do. And if they turn back and say, okay, we need an outside group to tell us what to do, isn't that kind of defeating the purpose?
Well, at least they have somebody to blame it on when they do it. And they can say, well, we were told the people want us to do this, so this is what we did, so it's not our fault, whatever happens.
But that's not leadership.
What do you expect? I really think that's a big problem, and I think I don't think it's going to change until we tell them at the polls sometime.
But Jerry Sanders ran on this platform that he had a history of turning things around, that he was strong, he was a former policeman, police chief, that he could take care of things and charge ahead.
Maybe he will. I don't know. I don't see a whole lot happening, but I hope so.
What do you think, Scott?
Well, to be fair, he did only have a few months before the budget came out. He has now a full year to come up with a comprehensive plan. He says he has, and that he is, and that's on in the works. And so we have certain things that we hope that will be included, and that next year's budget will be easier to read, for example. So we'll see what happens. I think it's easy to criticize and to see what happens in the past, and I will do that a lot. But he does have a chance to do something now, so I'll be anxious to see how it turns out.
And what about the city council? Well, go ahead.
Let me throw into this a word that keeps coming up in private conversations but never in public conversations: labor. Labor has never been more powerful at the polls than it is now in San Diego. That is having a profound effect on political races. I don't know that it's a bad effect. I don't know it's a good effect, but I think we all need to understand we have a very organized vote coming from labor now, which whether they understand what they're voting on or not, somebody who's telling them thinks they understand what they're voting on, and maybe we don't, and that puts us at a loss.
But labor didn't support Sanders in the last election.
Well, they certainly are now.
So if he...
He's in. They're in.
Well, so can he build a coalition that can actually make something happen here in San Diego? Like build a library, build an airport, save the Navy Broadway complex?
I hope so. I wonder if he calls in labor and says, now I want you to support a library. If he calls in the other side and says, I want you to support a library. What amount of support is he going to get? I think he's scared of it. I might be too if I ran his place.
But you didn't run for mayor.
Thank God.
All right, we'd like to hear some questions from you. Anybody like to ask Neil or Scott something? Please go to the microphone.
Quite apart from the problems of apathy and incompetence, as the matter I want to ask you about is, as I listen, what I hear is that one thing that's impeding leadership is fear. And my question is, what are potential leaders afraid of? And could you delve maybe somewhat deeply into what is this fear, if I'm correct in hearing that that's one of the problems? Thank you.
I love that question. You want to go have that first? I love that question.
Actually, that's really interesting. While you were asking the question, I thought of one example. And whether you think it's right or not, Brian Mainshine, one of the city councilmen, came up with a proposal maybe a year and a half ago to propose that the city switch from a defined benefit pension system that they have now, where the employees are guaranteed a certain amount for their future, and he came up with an idea that they should do a defined contribution, where a 401k type thing. And whether that's the right plan or not for City Hall, he came out and he did one press conference and he left it alone. That was it. Now, if he really believed that was the idea, one press conference isn't going to do it. You have to do an alliance. You have to build an alliance for it. You have to build support. You have to find the business community or the people that are going to support something like that to get behind you. You have to go and build a movement to get something that big done. One measly press release is going to do nothing for it.
He gave them a showpiece.
He wasn't even a very good show. So. I asked him about it about a year and a half later. I actually gave him a little trouble in my column about it. I said, well, you know, that's not leadership. That's just a press release. And he said, well, nobody got behind it. And I said, well, okay, you could have done something about it, right? He said, well, nobody got behind it. And I said, well, why didn't you challenge them to, I don't know, do... you know, Jerry Sanders supposedly supports something similar. Why didn't you say, why aren't you behind me? Or why didn't you build an alliance with the business community or the Republican Party or whatever you wanted to do? Again, I don't know if this is the correct reform for city government or not, but the point being that he needed to build a movement to get something like this done, and he stopped at just a press release. And I think that what people are afraid of here is to not be part of this group, to not have this... To not have the clique behind you, to not have the your friends and people that you have the mixer with, and I think the city is sick in that way, that nobody wants to stand out and face sort of the wrath that comes from having an idea. And
wonderful, wonderful. I agree completely on that.
I think that's what's happened.
And I think your reference to not wanting to stand out from the crowd is pivotal too. I think this all the years I've known these people and looked at their votes, they are responsible to a Malin Burnham, or they are responsible to an A, B, C, or D. And if they break the code, they're not going to get their campaign funds or their contributions. And everybody seems to have a grip on themselves from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And that's why they do those things, I think.
All right.
Hi. Okay, this is two questions, so bear with me. One is the Chargers and the stadium. And the supposed new stadium, what's the deal with that? What's your take on that? And secondly, in just two years, the mayor and the city attorney and are going to be up for re-election, and half the city council is going to be gone. What do you think is going to happen with that in the future? Will it improve the situation? Will it make it worse? Or you just don't know?
Well, I think responding to your second question first, the city council right now is paralyzed. That fear about not wanting to stand out is exponentially worse right now, because they also have this thing hanging over their head that they're negligent or, you know, borderline corrupt, and so there's a whole
lovely place we live.
I like that.
They have a horrible
DC
problem.
Borderline corrupt.
Well, the mayor could, for instance, the mayor has total control over part of the city council, because he can say, do this or do that, and if you don't, I'll call for you to resign. And I think there's a total stasis, a paralysis on there among at least three or four of the council members. And I think that any change might potentially be a welcome relief from that. As far as the charges, this is really interesting because there's two sides going on right now. One, they say that the charges are doing this elaborate choreographed dance out of town, that they're trying to act like they're doing everything they can to prove that they're not going to be able to do anything here and that they're just going to leave. And then the other side says that, well, they're just looking for a spot, and perhaps National City has the spot for them, perhaps Chula Vista has the spot for them. And the question then becomes is how much is the city or how much are citizens willing to pony up for a new stadium? And I think that if we do decide something like that this time, then we should be very upfront and sincere with the citizens about how much this is going to cost, and they should have a chance to decide very clearly that they want to pay more for a stadium because these aren't free facilities to construct. So.
And I would add to that only that if a city this broke votes to build a stadium for the owner of a professional football team, we ought to have our heads buried.
Well, one of the things that Jerry did do, he said, Jerry Sanders, when it was coming down to whether he should let the Chargers, you know, consult with other cities, he said, the city has neither the time nor the money to do anything too ambitious for you right now, so feel free to talk to other people. He got a lot of criticism for that, but that was a pretty strong move. So,
well, I think he would have gotten a lot more had he said, yes, we will support
well, that's
stadium.
Well, that's the perpetual question around here is how much support can you give the Chargers or not? Yeah.
What do you think, Neil? Is there the political will in the county to support something like this?
I think we all enjoy the Chargers, but I don't think that anybody I know thinks that the city should be reaching into its present deficit to support the Chargers.
One of the things I keep bringing up is that if they want to build a new stadium, they should put out how much it's going to cost, charge, put the tax out in front of everybody that it would be to support a new stadium. And if people want it, vote for it. And if you don't, don't. And if it doesn't pass, then they leave.
Professional football is a very successful business.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the cleverness of the business is that they tease us with the possibility of their departure unless we pony up. And I don't like that.
Yes.
Before I ask my question, I'd like to thank the two of you and the gentleman here for starting the website, which is one of the few places where we can get honest news and honest commentary. My question is, aside from his mannerisms, do either of you or both of you believe that our city attorney is doing more good or more damage?
More good. Well, we'd have to invent a Mike Aguirre if we hadn't found one. He's doing something that's absolutely indispensable now.
I think he's got. I think he has problems. I think he needs to calculate his moves better. I think he could do. He could be more effective if he had a little bit more savvy with certain things. But I guess that's what makes him him. He's not the problem here at all. And anybody that would try to cast him as the problem is, I think, misguided. And so I think that the question then becomes, you know, how does he best get done what he wants to do? And so we'll see. But he doesn't mind doing what he does, so I don't know if it's going to change.
we could. I don't know whether Dale Carnegie's book is still in print or not. But we could all get together and send him
how
a case.
How to win friends and influence people.
How to make friends and influence people.
How do you describe the relationship between Aguirre and Sanders?
Well, I think it's very profitable for both of them. What do you think, Scott?
Well, they started out just two peas in a pod. Jerry came out and supported Mike Aguirre's most controversial measures, and they had a couple of falling outs, but nothing as dramatic as everybody anticipated. And I think they both recognized that the other is very popular, it would be a dangerous move for either one of them to visibly, you know, drive a chasm between the other. Jerry jokes that Mike Aguirre calls him 6 or 7 times a day, even on Sunday morning. Mike Aguirre does have a tendency. He used to call reporters that often. Now he just calls the mayor. So.
And the mayor takes the call?
Things have changed for him.
Yeah, I guess so. All right, thank you. Yes, go ahead.
First of all, I want to compliment Neil on what you said about the 15 acres, the naval land. I'm thinking very seriously about what happened in New York City with Ground Zero and when the population picked Daniel Libeskind's plan. And look what's happened with the developers like Silverman. Can't this happen again in San Diego? I mean, you're saying that that is going to happen. How can Center City Development and the powers that be listen to the citizens without letting a big developer take over and not get a world-class architect in? I know we're going to have Richard Myers do our courthouse, and that's because the government, the United States government, is sponsoring that. How can we as citizens start a grassroots movement to let the city listen to us and not see what happened in New York City happen here in San Diego? I mean, I'd love to see a Saarinen Arch or a Sydney Opera House, something world-class that says this is San Diego. But I think that's a pipe dream. We can't even get a library built.
Well, I like what you say, but we're talking about a city that doesn't know of itself as being world-class. It just mentions the word whenever, the phrase whenever it can. I don't think there's any. The roots of this city are, hell, I'm from the South. I came from North Carolina. Half of us came from the Midwest. Our parents, at least, were all, you know, the era of the Grapes of Wrath. Some of them did a little better than that. But we are a very interesting hereditary mix of basically rural people. And we are not melding well as a city.
But there's an appetite for world-class things, though. I mean, we have high-tech industries here that are world-renowned, and why couldn't we have signature buildings of that caliber as well?
Why couldn't the mayor stand up and ask that question of the people?
How can we get him to do it?
Well, I think your problem isn't the grassroots movement. I think you have plenty of that built up, especially around this issue. I think the question would be to force some of these people and these groups of power to be able to break free of their cliques and start leading something like that too, and to provide some of the old type of power to some of these newer ideas. That's, you know, if the inside part of the city is what's been controlling it, then that inside probably needs to change a little bit to make sure that different decisions are made. I don't know.
The question I hear when things like this come up around City Hall is, do you think we can get labor support on that? I'd raise the same question about this.
Well, I think that's why the media comes into this too, because for a long time, if you only have one source of media on a daily basis, then these groups are only going to find their information and their perspective from this one source. And if you have a competitive media environment, then you get better information, and perhaps dissident groups can find a voice for once.
I wish we weren't a nonprofit at Voice, so we'd come out with ballot recommendations.
That's what this is. You could give your recommendations right now. Okay, go ahead.
Hi, I'd like you to comment on the idea of a performing arts center for San Diego, given that a performing arts center generally can generate more revenue for a city than a sports venue, and it could extend our tourism days a day or two. What do you think about the idea of an iconic performing arts center, and how can we go about making that a reality for San Diego?
I'd love to see it built down on the waterfront. I'd love to see something gorgeous on that 15 acres.
A Millennium Park type of idea?
Yes. I think you'd see a whole lot of support from the public if they saw something beautiful about to happen, because it would be really shocking to see something beautiful about to happen. I really think somebody could rouse this community with an idea like that and say, okay, here's what it's going to cost. We'll go into debt for this much, and this is what you'll have, and you'll be proud of it. I think this could happen. It's high time.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Keith, last question.
I'd like to thank you. First of all, getting a dose of wisdom like this is such a wonderful treat. You speak about urban identity. So I have a kind of a question with respect to the multiculturalism that's going on. We have a state that's a majority-minority state. How complicated does it become to develop the kind of urban identity that you're talking about when you have such a polyglot mix of ethnicities and so forth? And the other thing is the border. When you think of the urban identity, how integral is the sort of Mexican counterpart, and what do you think about the militarization of the border, and how is that affecting our prospects for becoming a world-class city?
Well, I think we're making fools of ourselves when we militarize that border. If we have to arm ourselves against the Mexicans, it means we haven't reached out to them. That's what I think.
Scott?
Well, that poly influence that you talked about, I think that multiculturalism could be the identity, right? Finding how that is reflected in buildings and architecture is what America's best at. And maybe we can have those visionaries succeed here. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's too esoteric, but that doesn't daunt me as much as excite me. So,
well, New York City is certainly a polyglot of a city.
Why don't five of you in this audience get together and have breakfast one morning and say, we are a committee of this, and this is what we're going to come out for, and Voice will support you, and all hell will break loose.
Well, on that note, we'd like to thank you both, Neil Morgan and Scott Lewis. Thank you for coming.